I'll do it if you want.
Roll call, please.
Mike Lapine.
Present.
Vice Chair Baker is excused. Next need.
Present.
Tony Mitchell. Present. Will Ibershoff.
Present.
Cindy Potter.
Present.
Dustin Hawken is absent. Jason Pollock. Jeff Hurd. Present. Jeremy Green is not here. Penny Kudim was not in the room. Steve Webb. Here. Tim Gassner. Tim Plummer. And Trent Titus.
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, we currently do not have a quorum until that person I mentioned hopefully gets here soon. But let's go over public comments. Is anybody here for a public comment? Anybody on Zoom for a public comment? She just did this. Okay. First on the agenda, report on the shopping carts return efforts.
Thank you, Mayor. So staff understands that the Homeless Advisory Committee made a recommendation to the Planning Commission to approve the shopping cart regulations. We've since made some slight changes to those regulations in preparation of bringing a proposal to them for their consideration. We anticipate bringing that proposal to them at their second meeting in December, which feels like the 24th of February, something like that, the third Wednesday of the month. Thereafter, should they approve it, it would go to the City Council for their consideration as well. So both the Planning Commission and City Council would take formal action on it. And if it's okay, we'll just kind of keep you up to speed on where that project stands, just so you have an understanding of that. And I believe, Fatma, did you share the stats with the committee at our last meeting?
I did not. I apologize for that, but I will after this meeting.
Okay. Yeah, we did gather some statistics from one of our contractors that collects the carts and returns them. So we know over about a month, month and a half, how many carts were collected and then which store they were returned to.
Nick, just a correction here. I was referring to the regulation. The revised regulations have not been shared with the committee. The stats are included in the agenda and packet.
Okay. So you do, that's right. On the back page of the staff report, you do have a couple tables there. And so there you have the statistics showing which store is having to take back most of the grocery carts. And my guess is that the statistics are supporting what you intuitively know.
You're saying like for January, 30 of them were missing?
Yes. So 30 of those were well beyond the retailer's property. So, you know, we oftentimes find them, you know, 3-4 blocks away at over by the homeless service center or, you know, for example, way out on the southwest side of town, you know.
In putting this in the context, I'm speculating that probably one of the reasons for the higher number of Safeways is because of the proximity to the camp.
Yep.
It's closest.
Could be, yes. But nonetheless, it is those carts not being retained on the property either directly or indirectly is creating problems for our community, right? And so that's the issue. And so that's exactly why we asked for your recommendation to the Planning Commission at your last meeting.
I heard there's been some movement since that time that they're now starting to secure their baskets outside. Is that what I heard?
I met with the store director, and he assured me that he had the equipment to chain them up behind the store, but I am told that that hasn't happened yet, so okay. I'll be making a follow-up call. Okay. He also told me that he had shared with his regional manager that they were going to look at the same security system that you've seen in other stores where you can't leave the property with a cart or the wheels lock up. And so he's looking at that same model to replicate within the store itself. But I'll work with him on the locking.
Thank you.
So that, Mayor Lapine, is your report on the shopping cart return effort or the regulations to address that problem? And maybe other questions from the committee or otherwise?
Thank you, Nick.
Great.
Welcome, Chief.
Fatma, would you let the record show at 211, Chief Plummer showed up or arrived, and we now have a quorum?
At 2:11 p.m. on February 5th, 2024, Homeless Advisory Committee have reached a quorum.
Thank you.
You now at a quorum? Oh, wonderful. I'm not, still not going to let the sheriff off, though. status update on no camping, no littering signs.
Yes. So we have a contractor that's helping us install those, and he's also working with the Public Works Department. I think it was last week or the week before, we worked with them on the height of the sign and where to put those. I'm glad we had the discussion because it was his understanding that guidance from our prior code enforcement officer, Kiever, was to put the sign, call it down in the creek. And that would have been entirely problematic from a creek perspective. It would just be another impediment for things to get wrapped around, you know. So clarified that those signs would be put at the top of the bank about 6 feet in height. They'll be put in with the metal pole. And I believe that should be wrapped up within the next week or two. So.
Would it be possible to get one of each? Or I don't know, are these a combined sign? Could we get one to actually be placed on the Shelter Services Center property?
We can get as many as you like. I don't have any problem with that at all. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It would be great if we could have that same no camping and no littering communication on the side of the.
Yes. No problem. Fatma, can you make arrangements accordingly?
Yeah, we can coordinate after this meeting.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's all I have, Mayor.
Thank you, Nick. Homeless Service Center operations update. Tony.
Thank you, Mayor. My apologies for not being at the last couple meetings. It was a momentous start to the Shelter Services Center, but things are settling down now, and just really grateful again for being able to conduct operations on the property and in the facility. What a wonderful facility it is. If someone hasn't been through, just myself and my assistant are office there every day, so feel free to just say, hey, you know, I want to swing by and such. So I think we've completed, as of last night, 26 nights. I think that, by and large, it's been without significant incident. There was probably the most significant incident was an individual that kind of in the middle of a dinner, got up and pushed another individual to the floor and gave him a bloody nose. Otherwise than that, he was okay. So I immediately, it was like, literally it was, I'm here and I turned my back and this happened. So it's like, you go down to the hallway and it's just a matter of getting his coat out of a locker and you're done. Don't plan on accessing the Shelter Services Center anymore. So outside of that, you know, I mean, there's the normal this and that, you know. Honestly, what has really occurred to us, not that we weren't at this place before, but we're a low barrier shelter, and that's well known. So on any given night, we have people there who are experiencing behavioral wellness challenges. We have people there that I'm confident that they have something on board, drugs and alcohol. One of the things that we have done to try to do some risk management and risk mitigation is the lockers, which is just a great thing. Previously, at our other locations where we were temporarily, we always took their backpacks and bags in to where the staff area. So sometimes we would be, you know, when our staff go down for their 4-hour nights, there's all this stuff you know, around them. Now that we have the lockers, and what had occurred to us, starting with the first night, is you need to put your jacket in there too, because you can have any manner of drugs, alcohol, or weapons in the pocket. Now, is it true, Chief, and you would know this, that could they still have something in their pants pocket? Yes. But and are we going to search? No. But by, you know, not only having the bags secured and the jacket secured, we're cutting down on the number of places that they could have something here. I think things have been good. We actually had our first one morning. We had our first fire alarm and evacuation drill. It was great because I've spent some time, you know, in emergency management, about 4.5 years. I just intuitively, without having a plan, knew exactly what to do to get people evacuated. And the place that we had them assemble, that was probably wrong because it was too close to the building. So for future, our assembly point will be pretty much the back of the driveway as it begins to kind of go off toward the camp so that we can get a certain number of feet away. That was interesting because everything worked. I think the system ended up calling fire and EMS, but so did I through 911. We did not have the fire panel keys at the time. So, you know, things are going off for how many ever many minutes. These stories are great because these are part of the stories for your memoirs. But when fire got there, they finally figured out how to pick the fire alarm lock to cut it off. Thank you. Things are going well. With respect to certain statistics, 26 nights. The facility from an overnight stay is being used about 48%. So out of the 27 fixed beds, we have an average of about 12.69 or 13 souls staying. When you add up the average of those that come in for dinner only, you're averaging about 7. So we are serving about 19.96, or about 20 people a night between our overnight stay option and our dinner option. So things are going well. I would like a little bit more facility usage, but you know, Field of Dreams, you build it, they'll come. We're there to serve. The environment, I just have to give you all a picture. I'll just say a couple of other things and then tail off. So we try to intentionally set a peaceful or calm ambiance. So I discovered the YouTube videos where you have like jazz, instrumental jazz playing in the background. So I want you guys to get the visual. It's 6 o'clock, you know, we open the doors and we start to let people in. And when they come in, there's these screensavers that they look like a library or a cozy coffee shop or what have you. We have the community room lights dimmed down about halfway, and there's this like this smooth jazz playing in the background. And so I've got to tell you, it's really cool, that little living room setup. And again, I'm just so grateful not only for the facility that was built, but the FF&E dollars that were available to help us equip that, because that would have been a total stretch for FBN to have to purchase this. But, you know, it's just a great ambiance, and we've not had any children stay yet, but we are prepared with our women and families dorm. We have a capacity of 10 between women and or women with children. And some people might ask, well, gosh, if a dad came in, what would you do? Well, the supportive care room that's there for, you know, mobility challenged or disabled people, a lot of times you may not have someone that needs the room, so that becomes a flex room for us. So we can put like a dad and a family there. We could also put additional men there. If we put men down that hallway, I need that hallway watched like a hawk, because it's a hop, skip, and jump instead of turning this way. you could turn this way and go into the women and or women with families dorm. So I've instructed my staff to, you know, let's avoid putting men, outside of disabled, men in that room. But if we have to, you need to make sure that your position, because somebody is always up overnight where they can see that hallway. We have the security, the iPad arrived last week, and we had our camera training. And so we've got the iPad angles, and Ethan and Rocky, you know, they set it up in groups really nice so that we can go to the outside cameras, and they have everything labeled so we know exactly what we're looking at a glance, whether it's the areas outside the emergency room in the dorms, whether you're looking at men or women's, you know, dorm hallways, et cetera, et cetera. So they did a real nice job of setting that up. So things are going well. We are, a couple last comments. We're experiencing, I think, more people, you know, from the camps. They don't always decide to stay. And, you know, but I like the dinner only option because it gives, you know, at first I was like, well, wow, we're feeding people who have no intention to stay there. What's that about? But then I rethought about that and I said, you know, that's all right. If it gives people an introduction to the Shelter Services Center and maybe it's a relationship and a trust builder. And then there have been cold nights during the cold snap. By the way, we did successfully operate 90 consistent hours 2 days after we opened. We're still shaking down the building, and all of a sudden we're going 24 hours a day for a total from Friday the 12th at 6 o'clock till Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. And we were able to get through it and everything worked fine. So things are going well. We're just super grateful to be operating in the facility. The crews are there. GTI is finishing the landscaping. John is still around wrenching on like some of the additional you know, blinds and that sort of thing. So they're still there supporting the final things that need to be done in the building. But everything's great. It's all good. And thank you again to the city. We're very grateful to be operating this.
I understand that you acquired an emergency generator. An emergency generator.
We did?
Okay. I'll get back on that. Someone was talking to me about, does the shelter have an emergency? I don't think the shelter has an emergency generator. And then I heard, the last rumor I heard is funding for one has been acquired.
Oh.
That might be the same rumor that I've been hearing about other stuff.
But we didn't install a transfer switch in the panel, right? So.
Okay, stay tuned.
Yeah.
So, Tony, amazing job of getting 48%. Most shelters that open up, it takes them 6 months to get to that. So amazing you did that in 26 days. Do you know what's keeping people the 7% number for dinner? It's not your cooking.
Oh, that's about an additional 7 people.
Additional seven people. So, I thought you said 7%.
So if 13 stay, an additional 7. The numbers are all over the place. But we're serving 7 more folks a night than stay at the shelter.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was worried about your cooking, Tony, when you said 7. So,
well, and well, you should, because if I was cooking, just like if I were singing and when the wolves howl, no. It's an additional 7 on average past those souls that are staying overnight. And everybody gets a meal, of course.
Do we have all the facilities that are operational, like the laundry facilities and shower facilities? All those are up and being
great used? Question. So, the laundry facility was designed for us. If I had thought about it earlier in the project, I would have asked for an additional plumbing on the other side of the laundry room if it would have been big enough to have machines. What we're looking to do, Mayor, is with one of the local laundromats, we want to try to come up with a Laundry Love program where you could have a load of week. Not bedding, but clothes or whatever, and we'd have volunteers or either staff dropping coins in and transferring from washer to dryer. It's not something that we're thinking about in the facility because we, it just would run those machines down in a hurry. And actually, those machines are needed to be dedicated to our laundry. And we're constantly doing laundry, kind of stuff, including the executive director. After I go back, I've got to transfer stuff from the washer to the dryer. No. But showers will likely start this month. Yeah. No later than the beginning of the month. I need to come up with a volunteer or staff system, how I'm going to clean it. I need to maybe run out and talk to Plateau or Loves and, you know, see, are there any gizmo methods that you have for keeping that right. The plan is that we would do, I'd love to be able to do 4 showers an hour. It would be by appointment only. That being the case, you know, to get people exactly in and out on 15 minutes might be a stretch. So more than likely it would be 3 an hour, so 8 hours, 24. I believe that we'd be able to get in between the 2 showers, 50 showers a day, and we would do one shower day per week.
Kind of like they do at Lowe's, they'll call you or the PA when your shower's ready.
Either that or the little butcher machines where you take your number out of the little red machine. No, we'd have people sign up. And so laundry, showers, we talked about that. There is one of the local barbers, and we're looking to now nail those conversations down about having haircuts. I see these as campaigns. So shower campaigns, haircut campaigns, including possibly, I want to try to see if I can connect with the local barber beauty college in Bend to see if we can get trainees out to do that. We have some thoughts about foot care, maybe if we can get some health care professionals to help us understand how to wash feet and how to basically, not trying to be a medical professional like a podiatrist or whatever, but you know, to be able to maybe identify, hey, there's some issues here. Boy, I've got a photo on my phone. One guy came in one night. I don't know whether it was near frostbite or jungle rot. My coordinator sent me a picture, and this guy came in, and he was just sobbing. It was, his feet were hurting him so bad. So if we are able to do something like that, maybe that will allow us to identify issues, you know, feet being important when you're houseless, and, you know, be able to do a referral. One last thing I'll mention, and again, I don't want to monopolize the time. We met with some of the principal food folks from Deer Ridge, and it looks like they're starting the process of putting a contract together to handle dinners at this point. We think we can handle breakfast, and then we're evaluating whether a full lunch is necessary, or is there some fruit or whatever that we can send out. You know, just looking at economies of scale and costs and such. But a hearty dinner and breakfast is important, and we met with the folks from Deer Ridge. And we like what we heard. So it's working its way, starting with the local institution, and it's got to go all the way through Salem. But if everything works out well, we'll be able to bring in maybe a contracted dinner meal. And I got to tell you, the cost, I'll share this if I think it's okay, but we haven't seen the final contract. We're talking about $350 a meal or somewhere around there. And I'm going, people are telling me that the food is, you know, somewhat delicious. It's good. It's been, they have their registered dietitians, so it's really metered to meet the needs of
They provide lunches folks for the senior center.
And, yeah, can you believe, I mean, that will save us a ton, because we've got to get away with the donated meals because of some of the requirements. And we're in the process of making sure all our folks have food handler cards. So we're looking to create some breakthrough with the meals and such. So there's a report. Any other questions?
Thank you, Tony. Dr. Baker and I, when we were talking about right before your shelter even opened the doors yet, we were things that we were thinking that we wanted to plan, but we know that, you know, we were on a time frame, and this was what we got put together. And I think we have a wonderful start. But what we were talking about was this could just be known as phase one.
Exactly.
We have other space up there, which means we have space to grow to put in other services. And Nick was involved in this conversation too about how, okay, we still need space for counseling and, you know, treatment services and that kind of stuff. So we can still expand upon that. I mean, we've been very lucky and fortunate to get the funding we did for the stuff we did, especially for the hard work that Nick was able to put out. I think we just keep the momentum and search for more funding. We can still build those facilities and go for phase two or phase three. And it looks like we already got the ground. And this is the appropriate committee to push that in so we can get that right.
Mayor Lapine, yes. Of course, echo that. But I also wanted to bring our attention to a story in the Oregonian, I think it was this weekend, that said that the state issued a report identifying a 5,000 beds needed statewide for mental health. And my prediction is that report will be provide inertia for the state to start talking about how we better fund mental health. So I'm looking to our partner Trent over here. As you and the public health department are in those conversations, maybe that's another way to provide some additional capital dollars to maybe expand the facility or provide additional services as that mental health conversation becomes more prominent. And my perspective is that in February of 2024, we will have the short legislative session. 25, you're going to have a full legislative session. So that's probably where you're going to see those dollars start to be approved and formalized in programs, so on and so forth. So an eye towards that would be appreciated.
Is it mental health or is it alcohol and drugs?
Boy, I don't remember. That was about 4 days ago.
Mayor, if I can just mention just one small thing. I hope to, in Q2 of this year, one of the vision pieces for me is to create a service provider form. I see the Shelter Services Center as not FBN's house, but it's the community's house to really come alongside those who are challenged with experiencing houselessness. So one of the things that I've been sitting with for the last few months is I think it's time now to have an active service provider form. So once a month, maybe 60 to 75 minutes to begin with, you know, reach out. Trent and I've talked about this. I've talked about this with Best Care. I've talked about this with Saving Grace, Mosaic. I want to gather any organizations and however many people that they want to send to do that that relationship and trust building to make sure that we understand what each other does in terms of services and interventions and such, and then we can begin to chew on, you know, issues. We can bring issues to the table, specific issues around that are affecting those who are houseless and begin to be to go after collective impact with that. So I just want to, you know, have you stay tuned for the fact that we're going to use the Shelter Services Center, and I hope that FBN could take a leadership role and begin to set a table for discussions. Because the way that I look at it, one last thought, you know, we have certain capabilities and we're looking to raise up the capabilities to do expanded work. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that to be fully effective or successful, it takes a village. It's going to take the community-based organizations coming together to really make a dent and an impact in this. So I'm excited about the possibility of really developing that in the community's house, which is the Shelter Services Center. Yes, ma'am. I don't like terms like they. Our guests come in, they're asked to put their things in the locker, and then the locker is locked by staff. At any time during the night, if they need something, medication or whatever, they can have access to their lockers. But when you come in, you place your stuff in a locker, and it's secured. And then we have a identification system to know who's who and what's what.
Convenient way to traffic anything, if you know, if they might be like, I'm in locker three, go grab whatever it is that, yeah. So I was just curious of how
yeah,
that works.
They are immediately locked down. Yeah, and then they're only unlocked by staff, locked and unlocked.
And then do they get cleaned after each use? Like, is it designated?
Not after every use, but I have found myself going through with Lysol wipes and stuff on a few occasions. Yeah, so we're really working on our sanitation routines overall. Yeah, we're constantly cleaning stuff.
Obama, did you get the sheriff came in late? Did you get him down?
Thank you for saying that. For the record, Sheriff Jason Pollock is present.
Thank you. Also, since Renaming was here, Eric Nelson is here from the CYC Studies, the Vice Chair of the Homeless Leadership Coalition. So welcome, Eric.
And I'm here from CYC.
Oh, we have double people here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, and what is your name, please?
Jean Robert.
Jean Robert. Oh, thank you. All right. We've got quite the showing here today. General discussion on severe weather and homeless needs. Is there anything else that you can see we need on there, Tony? Anything that you come across during that ice storm that we might need to adjust?
Operations went well. It's a challenge from a staffing perspective for us. I was doing 14, 15-hour days myself. That's okay. We do what we need to do to get her done. But, I think maybe the biggest challenge is that when you have to go 24, you know, how do you handle your staffing, you know, both your staffing needs, and it's going to affect your costs and that sort of thing. But I think we're okay. But it's how do you staff, you know, are there volunteers? You know, that can come. But, yeah, it the 90-hour period went well, yeah.
Nick, was there anything on the city side you saw that went needed?
I don't believe so. I just wanted to put on the agenda to facilitate the conversation in the case of a lot of things, there was something I didn't know, just kind of bringing people together and coordinating.
There is one thing. Will and Jeff, we, you know, with the, you know, agreement and responsibilities. Boy, I got to tell you, with that ice, you know, how does a small organization like us really do the things? I one day we had a board meeting, and an hour and a half later, I had one of my board members. I looked up, and he said he was going to do it, and he came back with his tractor. And was clearing the asphalted portion, and we were so grateful. The one thing when we get into weather like that, and I know it is the responsibility of the faith-based network to keep the property and keep it safe, we're going to have to figure out how our capabilities really run there. It was like a skating rink. You know, on the asphalt, on the sidewalk approaches. I was so nervous during that period. Of course, I talked to Jeff with this brand new concrete. We don't want to put ice melt down. Jeff gave me a bucket of gravel that you could kind of broadcast some stuff. But really, the question is, during severe weather, how is there a way that FBN could get some support? I'm not trying to cast off our responsibility, but I'm recognizing that is a large footprint property, and we're a tiny trailer size organization. And how do we actually keep that thing safe and such? Because it was pretty bad out there. Not fortunately, thank God, there were no injuries or falls or whatever that I knew of. But those few days during this weather stretch, it was like nothing that I've hardly seen in my... So that's the only consideration that I would ask during severe weather is, how do we effectively do that?
Yeah, and so, again, being new in the facility, kind of like a new car. Sometimes you got to figure out where the buttons are at and when to use them. And so, you know, maybe one of the lessons learned is, as you were looking for the weather for the coming week, starting conversations early with Public Works about, hey, this is coming up. Are you seeing the same thing as me? Okay, what sort of resources do I need to prepare for that? Looking to people who've been in the community longer than me, I don't remember an ice storm like that in quite some time. So it's somewhat irregular, but, you know, large snow events or slick events do happen from time to time. So keep an eye on that weather, communicate early.
Maybe, even though it's our responsibility, maybe we can get some training and technical assistance from Public Works about, okay, here's some methodologies to keep your parking lots as good as they can be, or, you know, what you can use down on your sidewalks or what
I'll have a conversation with the city administrator and Public Works director and see if they can't reach out, connect, and build that line of communication for the next time.
Thank you, Mayor.
But if there's something available that can help out with that, we'll put that out. Next update on code enforcement officer recruitment. Is that you, Nick?
Yes, it is. So we did have code enforcement officer candidate interviews last Monday. We have made an offer to an individual, and so I think their first day could be as late as February 12th. Could be sooner. That's another way to say that. Just looking for some confirmations today on that. But we found what appears to be a good, qualified, experienced candidate. And so the other aspect of that is I asked the city manager of City Bend if we could borrow their code enforcement manager to provide training, and Mr. Goff did affirm that he would be happy to provide training. So the conversation now is, well, what does that training look like? And candidly, I said, well, I don't know. I'm not a code enforcement guy. You know, I don't know best practices. I know what our codes say and process and what we want to do. But the point is, we want to make sure that from day one, with the new position, coordinating with law enforcement, fire, public works, et cetera, and having our case management software, that we're following best practices. I should also mention in there that having a hearings officer now. So kind of pulling all these pieces together, let's make sure we get proper training for staff, which includes myself, because I envision as part of that training, maybe there's some policies or changes we need to make administratively to make sure we're doing what's needed. So that's the report on that.
Thank you, Nick.
Looking bright.
I'd like to point out that position got moved from a part-time position to a full-time position.
Well, it's funded for part-time right now. We're hoping to get that to a full-time. We do need to have a...
Really need to check my rumor, man.
well, truth be told, we did have a conversation with the Fire Chief Blake, about providing... So the city and the fire department have an intergovernmental agreement that identifies that the fire department will pay $40,000 a year in part for that position. And when Mr. Kiever gave notice, we agreed that we wouldn't charge them for services because no services would be provided. On the other hand, I think we're now starting to see, well, wait a second. You can't start and stop the funding, because to sustainably fund the program, you need the money. There may be years that you don't use all that money, and that'll help you in some leaner years. So the conversation with the chief is, we need to just affirm that we're okay with invoicing the fire department for that full money. If that's the case, then we'll move forward with making that a full-time position. And really the need, I don't know if I need to explain it, but should I? The efforts in the last 2 to 3 months have largely been focused on our homeless individuals and clean up the trash and a lot of other things, including shopping carts. And coordinating with our partners at public health and law enforcement and otherwise. So I'd like to think we're going to get beyond that. We'll get some of the, those lower hanging fruit issues resolved, and then we'll move on to the tall grass, the weeds, the trash, the illegally parked vehicles, and all the other things that go into code enforcement that I know this community desperately needs. So that's really the need for the full time there.
The work is there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick.
Yes.
I think that's three times now I kind of overstepped my rumor, Millicent. I kind of feel kind of bad.
That's all right. You can talk to the chief about it. But just let him know that you had an understanding that.
Well, he's not the one I heard it from. So.
I don't know if this is appropriate to bring up at this juncture, but code enforcement made me think about it. So I was coming and going today, and I looked over at the camp, and there's like a camper shell, a white camper shell that's kind of angled. Yeah. I mean,
yep.
It came from J Street Bridge. It was under there at one time.
And somebody imported it over to the camp?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll tag on that. Now, Nick and I are going to be meeting with a couple of senators or staff to talk about funding for to help cleaning up that creek. Also, I'll talk about with the airport and a couple of other issues. But Nick's been really good about chasing those staff people and trying to get times locked down so we can actually get some action done. So there's some movement from this committee and outside this committee to help support what we're doing. So.
So, I don't know if that's on or not. If you guys do find grants or funding to clean up, does that mean we got to move everybody from the camp so we can go down and clean it all up?
Well, it depends on what we find. And I actually met with, just before this meeting, our grant writer. You know, I think the problem at this point in time is that, you know, just kind of plain sight, you intuitively think that there's some contamination in the creek. Unfortunately, in the environmental kind of world, you need to quantify that and have a report before you can say it's a mess. So that's what we're trying to do. What depends on the contamination, right? You got to right-size the cleanup work with the contamination that's there. To be direct, that actually may be required. But I'll let the report bear that out and figure out what's needed to be cleaned up before I tell you with certainty that in the committee that that's actually needed.
Is there water near there or region there that's being actually tested?
Well, it's not that it's being tested. It's that about 1,000 feet away, one of the city's backup drinking water wells is within that location. So the concern is that, you know, to get in the environmental dictionary here, there's what's called the time of travel, and it's measured in years. So when you have water that percolates through the ground, you measure the number of years it takes to go a certain distance, right? And so the concern is there may be, you know, a time of travel, a short time of travel before you have percolation into the city's well or where it's being drawn out, and therefore it may contaminate that well. And that's important because in an emergency situation where our current water system isn't able to provide water, you would draw upon that well. Well, if the water's contaminated, then therefore you have a contaminated public water source. And that's really what we want to avoid.
Did you see that Deschutes has a grant for testing water?
The Deschutes Land Trust or?
County
I'd love to get a grant from Deschutes County, but they probably tell me to fly a kite.
No, I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah, I'll send the information.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you so much. Wow, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know if the grant is open, but it's worth knowing about.
Yeah, yeah.
The creek's going to be an ongoing thing. I think once we get past that stage to where we're able to start cleaning it, it's going to have to be something that we just constantly maintain.
Yeah.
Next, the next meeting is on March 4th. Does anybody have an issue?
No, I also wanted to put on a radar. Don't we have an open house coming up for the Homeless Service Center, Tony?
Yes.
I just wanted to put that on a radar. Maybe you don't know the date and time now, but we can get it out to the committee as it's figured out.
There was a tentative date of February 26th. And we were going to be in communication with the city because we, of course, you know, they're probably would be someone or from the city that we would want to share some thoughts. But I'll have to get with our planning committee to see how firm that's going to be at this time, or does it need to be kicked back a bit. But we have a tentative date of February 26th for a grand opening, a ribbon cutting. But I should know more hopefully in the next week, and I know that it's getting close to that.
Okay. Once that's confirmed, would you share that with me, and I'll make sure the committee members know that date as well.
Will do.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
I wanted to mention a couple things after talking with Mayor last week. Well, first off, on that camper that's down there, or the camper shell that's down there, I think what we kind of learned our lesson on that a little bit is I think one of those shells, I don't know if it's that one or not, we had those big dumpsters down there at one time, and so it was taken from one location into that dumpster, and one of the things that occurs is when you have that dumpster down there, people are looking for other things that they can use to help with their residences and kind of, you know, to making themselves some shelter. But I know that the camp has been brought up a couple of times, and I figure that that's probably a question as far as what's going on with that. I just want to let you know that over the next couple of weeks, and I talked with Trent a little bit ago, I talked with the mayor the other day, I would like to start putting a team together. Part of, you know, this is their homes down there. We look at it differently, but it is their homes. And so we're dealing with people. We're dealing with emotions. We're dealing with individuals that go through a lot of the same stuff that we do. And we need to be careful and thoughtful as we talk with those residents down there and as we get ready to move them from their homes. And so my hope is over the next couple of months, this is the wet season. We talked about this before last year. We aren't going to go down there today or next week or even next month and move them out. This is a process. We have to give them some knowledge. What are the resources? What's the process going to be? And my hope is that over the next several weeks that there's a team together that would consist of the police department, public health, best care with some drug counselors, mental health individuals, maybe even a liaison from the tribes, faith-based network, individuals that can go down there starting maybe at least once a week, just have a day where we're going down, or a time once a week to go down there, make those contacts, build those relationships. This is the process. These are the resources that are available. If we can use FBN on that backside, you know, where individuals are coming up to the shelter on a nightly basis and just kind of reiterating that message of these are the resources that are available. This is the process that's going to happen so that as we get closer to June-ish, we get to a point where the mayor brought up a good idea the other day about is over the next couple of months, their camps that are down there, their residences, their homes, to be able to start kind of cleaning out some of that area around their home, stuff that they don't need anymore, so that when we do go to move them out, we've gone from a whole bunch of stuff maybe down to some things that are more manageable. Well,
I can't take credit for that. That was when Nick was talking about first we'll do this in three steps. There's educate, then camp size reduction, and then into the move. So that wasn't me. That was just me repeating.
So
another rumor.
So as that gets closer, I just want to let you guys know that's what's going on. You know, we want to work with somebody. You know, I even asked the mayor the other day, I don't know anything about propane tanks, but maybe, you know, we can get Jared from the fire department down there and be able to go through with this group and say, hey, this propane tank's not safe or it's no good. And that's maybe how we start getting rid of some of those things. So, and then, of course, our code enforcement officer, you know, will be around by the middle of February and be able to get him down there. And it's going to be really important for him to build these relationships, because I'm not sure who the individual is, but I don't think that, you know, he's got the contact down there that me or the sheriff's office would have. So
few do.
but to get them down there and learn who these people are. So anyways, questions about that, you know, it is going forward to where this summer there's going to be a time that that's cleaned out.
Thank you, Steve. That's great leadership on that. Please let me know how community development, the city as a whole, can support you on that moving forward. Mayor Lapine, I did have two additional reports, just brief. One, also reading the Oregonian and the Bend Bulletin last week or so, I did note that both Portland and Deschutes County now being the next, is considering declaring a state of emergency for fentanyl. And so I've asked the city administrator to reach out to Nick Lelak, the county administrator, to see what is involved in that. As I read the resolution, I couldn't exactly tell because I was in a position to research the statutes that were cited. But my sense is by doing so, it may bring additional resources to the county. And so maybe it's important for maybe the city of Madras to do the same, or maybe Jefferson County. I don't know. But I want to just bring that to our attention. There must be a reason why Portland and Deschutes County are doing it. So I want to research that. Secondly, as Mayor Lapine noted, the mayor will be convening a meeting with Senator Wyden and Merkley's staff this Friday at noon here at City Hall. That's a staff-level meeting. It's not open to the public. We're trying to focus discussions, again, on our Willow Creek homeless camp and how we coordinate and quite honestly get resources from the tribal community as that is becoming a challenge. I will note the governor's office will be attending as well. So we're trying to do our best on having these conversations and move these needles to the right as we can. So just a quick update on some efforts there.
Anybody else? Eric, did you have anything you'd like to address with us or just say hi? Or
hi. I just wanted to attend, and as a member of the Homeless Leadership Coalition, and see if there were any questions about the pit count or any of the efforts that we currently have been undertaking.
Is that count still going on, or have you wrapping it up, or how's that going?
The count wrapped up on Tuesday. It goes for a week, and a lot of effort got put into it. Thank you, Tony, for everything you did to contribute to that. And we really appreciate the cooperation of the folks there in Madras.
Thank you, Eric. All right. Nothing else? Okay. We'll tell Dr. Baker he was next. And we'll adjourn at 2:58.
Recording stopped.